Now, I love a good true crime podcast or book, and I know I'm not the only one. In saying that, though, the world of true crime is one that not many people tend to delve into any deeper than, you know, listening to your podcast on the train or reading your book in the evening. Even less people ever actually get to speak to the people convicted of these horrific crimes, but some do. Studio 10's regular crime expert Amanda Howard, also dubbed the Serial Killer Whisperer, is speaking at Casula Powerhouse's Gritty Lit True Crime Writers Festival this weekend, and she joins me on the line now. Amanda, thank you so much for your time this morning.
Good morning, Tess.
So, as I mentioned, true crime podcasts, reading about crime, I mean, I love it personally. I know it's a pretty widely loved sort of genre, but it seems like, you know, you've sort of taken it to the next level. Are you able to knuckle down what it is that you find about serial killers so interesting?
I think it all actually began when I was in my late teens, and we had a serial killer in Sydney that was killing the elderly ladies known now as the Granny Killer. And we'd done some profiling on the case, which ended up being wrong. But when he was captured, and he seemed very normal and average, you know, he was married, he had a full-time job, he had two daughters, I realised then that what we expect these people to be, you know, these scary monster sort of types, they're actually quite normal and average. And I think that's what fascinated me more. And so fast forward almost 30 years later, and it's become my life.
And so how did you actually get into speaking to serial killers? Because that's something that I know you don't hear a lot about, other than, you know, sort of really high sort of detectives and people making documentaries.
Yeah, well, I was actually at uni doing my criminology degree, and I found some information in one of the textbooks about Ivan Blatt that was actually wrong, because Ivan actually lives very close to my house, which is
terrifying.
Just a different link. Yes. And I remembered a teacher at school saying to me that you should always question sources, and if you can, you should go to the source yourself. So literally, I started writing to serial killers back in the early 90s. And I've probably spoken to thousands over the years, and I'm currently talking to about 50, both via phone and written correspondence. There's a couple of visits coming up soon and things like that as well. There was some many, many years ago as well. So it's just, it was about getting the right information from the person's mouth, because, you know, I do talk to families, I do talk to police, I do read transcripts and autopsy reports and see crime scenes and all of that, but I needed the full picture, which meant talking to the killers.
And you know, you've already dropped a couple of names, sort of like Ivan Milat, but there's some really scary names that do come up where I was reading the list of people you've spoken to: Paul Denyer, Haddon Clark, Roy Norris. Personally, the first thing that sprang to my mind was, you know, the very Hollywood images of Silence of the Lambs and Hannibal Lecter sitting there with his mask and all that stuff. What's the reality like?
Well, that book actually changed my life, I think. that was part and parcel. It was around the same time as The Granny Killer. It's very different. You know, you can sit in a hotel, I was going to say, a jail. oh, my goodness, where's my brain going? You can sit in a room, and, you know, there's lots of families around, and you can look around the room and, you know, multiple prisoners. Oh, I know him. He was, you know, done for a gangland shooting. Oh, I know him. He's a serial rapist. You know, you can actually do that around the room sometimes. So it's a bit chilling, but there's guards there and people to hopefully protect us if something was to go down. But it's the first couple of times it was terrifying, but you get a bit used to it after a while, because, I mean, these people, though we do want them to be scary, if they were scary, they wouldn't be able to get the victims that they do. You know, Ted Bundy got the 30-plus young teenagers into his car. Now, if he was a horrible person, he wouldn't have been able to do that. But by being able to be friendly and personable and chat them up and, you know, ask for their help, because he often had, you know, a cast on his arm and things like that, he was able to get so many victims into his car successfully. And that's what they're very good at. They're very good at being charming.
Which is actually something that I hadn't considered. It's almost a terrifying thought, really.
Yes.
So, I mean, are there sort of patterns in the sort of things they say to you? Is there something common that comes up fairly often, or is everybody different?
I mean, it's like a cross-section of society, so there is a lot of differences. some of them are happy to talk about crime. Some of them just go on about their appeals and how innocent they are and how they got framed. Others say, you know, I'm happy to talk about everything but, you know, so it's all different. It just depends on who the killer is and what they did. And, you know, it's very hard for people like John Robinson to claim that he's innocent when, you know, 10 barrels were found on his property. You know, like no one else put them there with the victims inside. So,
yeah.
You know, but you go, okay, well, you keep on that story and I'll just keep asking questions around and around and around until I get an answer.
And it is a big question, I guess. But knowing what you know, do you think that there is, or what I guess, what do you think it is that drives people to such extreme acts of violence?
There's many different reasons, but it comes down to almost like a sliding doors moment for them. We all have sexual fantasies. We all have emotions that sometimes frighten us, but we know not to cross that line. We know that regardless of how we're feeling, you know, we don't attack people. We don't go out and grab someone off the street and rape them. But there is people out there that have these fantasies and never act on it. But the serial killer doesn't realise where the fantasy ends and reality begins. And that's often the biggest part of what happens. And they are able to live with it because they blur it into their fantasy life. So there's very few killers that show remorse. Some of them do. Some of them, you know, when they're caught, they go, yeah, you got me. This is it. I'm done. You know, I was meant to be caught. Others get exhausted and stop killing, which is quite rare. But it's purely because of they're no longer able to do it. Like this Golden State Killer, we think that he stopped killing because he got old. But most of them, it's just about that they can, so they do.
And now, Amanda, you're speaking at Cajula Powerhouse's Death and Identity Festival this weekend as part of the Gritty Lit Festival. How can people get involved? Yeah, how can people get involved?
Well, it's a free event, but there is tickets sold for the various talks. I'm doing a talk on the unsolved child murders of Adelaide, because I go to Adelaide a lot to do a lot of research and talk to the families. But anyone can come. It's at the Casula Powerhouse, which is on Shepherd Street in Casula, which is just outside Liverpool for those that know southwestern Sydney. And it's going to be a massive, massive event. It's going to be lovely to have a whole day talking to people about this stuff. I don't usually get to do that, so it's going to be so much fun. So anyone and everyone should come down and see it. It's going to be big, so I'm very excited.
We'll pop the event link up in the podcast. Amanda, thank you so much for your time this morning.
Thank you for talking to me.
That was Amanda Howard, Studio 10's regular crime expert, and she's been dubbed the Serial Killer Whisperer, chatting to us this morning about her life and work as a true crime writer and what it's like to speak to convicted murderers.